Welcome to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. I'm Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss a new study by Barrage et al. Titled Long-Term Cerebrovascular Dysfunction in the Offspring from Maternal Electronic Cigarette Use During Pregnancy. This article was published June 25th, 2021. Joining us today are host Paula Warrington, authors Paul Chandler and Mark Olfert, and expert Alex Carl. Let's get started.
Great. Thank you so much for this great introduction. So, smoking during pregnancy is generally strongly discouraged in most societies because of the potential harm to the developing fetus. We all know that while cigarette smoking is discontinued by most women, some may substitute the cigarette use with electronic cigarettes or e-cigs or vaping. This is due in part to the idea and message that the use of e-cigs is safer alternative to cigarette smoking. The negative impact of direct and secondhand smoke exposure is well studied and established. However, very little is known about the impact of e-cigarette use on the smoker and those exposed to it. Furthermore, the impact of gestational use on e-cigarettes on the fetal brain and cerebrovascular function is not well understood. Paul and Mark, can you briefly discuss why this topic is important and why you focused on the cerebrovascular changes in the offspring?
Paula, thank you for that introduction. And yeah, we'd be happy to talk about this. We know from our own work, as well as many other labs over the past 5 years, there's increasing evidence that vaping leads to significant vascular dysfunction, vascular impairments. And we know that smoking during pregnancy translates down to the offspring. And there's been an underlying assumption that this may not be true for e-cigarettes with women when they're pregnant and translating this down to the offspring. So we wanted to conduct a study that was going to actually generate data and evaluate that. And that's because pregnancy is a vulnerable time, both for the mom, but especially for the fetus. It's developing its cardiovascular system, and any insult or any environmental exposures that the mom experiences during this critical developmental period can have lifelong consequences on the fetus. And we know that vaping to the individual creates impaired vascular responses, and the placenta and the fetus relies on the mom in order to grow and develop properly. And so we wanted to test and we wanted to understand what were these consequences here. So one of the reasons we were particularly interested in the cerebral vascular system is that we know that nicotine has significant effects on brain development and even lung development. But many people assume that if you vape without nicotine, that you may not have the same problems. And in fact, it's true, you won't have the issues concerned with addiction, because nicotine is the addictive substance. But really, there isn't much known about what e-cigarettes with or without nicotine does to the cerebral vasculature, particularly in the context of pregnancy. So we really wanted to understand that and to see if vaping without nicotine might prove to be a safer alternative than to vaping with nicotine.
I really like that you studied the offspring at multiple time points postnatally and that you included groups where vaping was done with and without nicotine. What were the main findings of your study?
Yeah, so this was kind of striking to see. And what we did here, we had the exposures during pregnancy. And really, this was a low dosage with about 20 puffs with a 1 hour exposure each day, and only during pregnancy. And we had two groups in the sense there was no nicotine in one e-cig with liquid, and then 18 milligrams of nicotine in the other liquid. And then once the animals or the pups were born, we examined cerebrovascular function and body weights, et cetera, at 1, 3, and 7 months post-delivery. And what was striking to see, using ex vivo approaches to measure middle cerebral artery function, we saw approximately 50% reduction in the ability of the middle cerebral artery to vasodilate to acetylcholine. And that was the same whether it was 0 milligrams of nicotine or 18 milligrams of nicotine. So that suggests that there's something in the base solution rather than nicotine itself driving this middle cerebral artery dysfunction at 1 month. And then maybe not so much surprisingly, but at 3 and 7 months, we found the exact same results. That is, there was no differences between nicotine and 18 milligrams of nicotine or 0 milligrams of nicotine at the 3 and 7 months, both compared to the controls, which was air exposed, had about a 50% reduction in the ability of the middle cerebral artery to vasodilate. Again, this would suggest that in the context here, that it wasn't nicotine driving this dysfunction, but more so something in the base solution or the size of the particular matter. And on top of that, we really didn't see any significant differences in the ability of the smooth muscle itself to vasodilate to sodium nitroperoxide or for it to constrict to phenylephrine. However, part of this dysfunction we see with the middle cerebral artery seems to be related to the ability or the bioavailability of nitric oxide.
Alex, as an expert in the field, what are the major take-home messages for you from this study? Do you have any questions for the authors?
This study was particularly impressive to me because the maternal exposures that were conducted had such a sustained impact on the offspring of the dams. And those pups, as they aged from, you know, just young pups to adolescents to adults at 7 months of age, had persistent reductions in endothelial cell responses to acetylcholine stimulation. In terms of public health, you know, if the same effects were to happen into humans long term, this could promote adverse outcomes, perhaps such as stroke. One additional impressive aspect to this study to me was that the administration of Tempol rescued the effects on vascular dysfunction, even though they were sustained at 7 months postnatal. So despite the fact that the exposures had chronic impacts, those impacts could be acutely rescued with Tempol, this superoxide dismutase mimetic. So that was striking to me. So too was that the effects were achieved with or without nicotine, suggesting that it is something within the e-cigarette that is non-nicotine based, be it the flavorants or the solvents, propylene glycol and vegetable glycerin, and their thermal degradation byproducts, that could underlie the impacts on vascular function. So in terms of questions, I have several of them. One is I noticed the extracellular vesicles were assessed in these mice, and it seems that the impacts were variable, dependent upon nicotine, so they were not exactly concordant with the observed reductions in vascular dilation. Did you all have any intention of following up on the role of extracellular vesicles? Did you see any evidence that they may be involved in these impacts somehow?
Yeah, Alex, so excellent question. And I want to sort of just, in answering that question, I want to highlight and emphasize that the exposures were only to the moms. And so in line with what you said, we're seeing these dysfunction at these later time points, but the pups, these animals themselves, have never been directly exposed. So the fact that we see dysfunction 7 months after, you know, and in human terms, a 7-month-old rat would be about a 40 or 50-year-old human. So the fact that these persist tell us that there is couple of explanations going on, one of which is that, as we mentioned earlier, the developmental period is critical. And so there could be abnormal development of the vascular bed or responses. Now, we didn't lose any animals. The litters were the same size. So this is not something that's actually changing in terms of the ability for the birth to take place. But the vascular system appears to have developed in a way that is going to be abnormal. And then the other potential explanation is that there are epigenetic factors that, get locked in or changed as a result of this period. And so this is one reason why we started looking at the extracellular vesicles, as these can carry any number of material, including genetic material, that could potentially provide an explanation as to why we still see this vascular dysfunction later on. Based on the data that we report in the paper, yeah, we are absolutely interested in understanding what material are in those vesicles and can that be altered or changed with a variety of treatments. As you mentioned, Tempol showing one of them. We know that reactive oxygen species is something that influences vascular reactivity and vascular responses under normal conditions. And so trying to better tease out and understand what's causing those changes is where we're at now. And our projects that are moving forward are really trying to tease apart some of those variables.
Thank you, Mark. I wanted to add something else in terms of, you know, a remarkable aspect to this study. The exposures of the dams were relatively modest. I mean, it was just 20 puffs a day for 1 hour, 3 week exposure. So to have the 7 month long impact, I mean, of course, given that these are maternal exposures and the fetuses would be impacted somehow, you know, it's entirely plausible that you could have long-term impacts. The fact that you did, and they were so consistent throughout the study, was exceptionally remarkable to me. And also that both sexes were at least qualitatively impacted the same. I know this study was unable to tease out statistically whether the sexes were differentially impacted, but nonetheless, that you saw qualitatively equivalent impacts across sexes is also a remarkable aspect. Could you elaborate how the impacts that you observed compare to any historic observations with smoking?
So, Alex, that's a great question. And a previous paper that we've actually published in AJP Heart, we had a control group of cigarette exposed, and this was a mouse study, and it was an 8 month exposure. Now, it wasn't a pregnancy exposure outcome, but it was a direct comparison between e-cigarettes and smoking, and to determine whether or not the vascular outcomes were different. When we compared mice that smoked cigarettes versus those that were vaping e-cigarettes, we found essentially identical vascular dysfunction outcomes. And so that really sort of set the stage when we were hearing that some public health agencies were promoting vaping over cigarettes to say, well, what are the concerns? And historically, we have known and we do know that smoking creates significant risk factors and dysfunction in the offspring. So if the individual effects were no different on the vasculature with a person who was actively vaping or smoking, the real concern was, and the reason we did this work was, we felt that it may be the same may be true for vaping during pregnancy. And even though we didn't have a smoking exposed control group here, the magnitude of dysfunction that we are seeing in the offspring is equivalent to that of what we see with direct exposure. So, you know, I would say, yes, the outcomes here from vaping towards the cerebrovascular effect are going to be essentially identical to that of what we see with smoking.
Yeah, just to kind of follow on from what Mark said, that was kind of, we were focusing on the aorta with our previous paper. I'm also aware that there are some direct examples of looking at the cerebrovasculature with smoking. And indeed, they find a similar level of dysfunction, mainly driven again by this reduced nitric oxide bioavailability. So the fact that we see e-cigarettes and e-cig plus nicotine having a similar effect, I think, is very interesting and something that we should certainly move forward on and try and look at higher resolution imaging and trying to understand underlying mechanisms for why we see this dysfunction in related to the base solution or the particular matter size.
The additional question I had was, what was the rationale for selection of French vanilla flavor in the e-liquids? Have you all compared this e-liquid's effects to the effects of others? Is there anything about French vanilla specifically, like perhaps the likelihood that it contains diacetyl or some other flavorant chemical within it that might make it uniquely or particularly toxic when it comes to the cardiovascular impacts?
So great question. There is a lot of work on flavors out there, and flavors themselves, depending on the flavor that a person chooses, can produce different chemical compounds when it's heated and reduced down when it's atomized and vape. Our choice for French vanilla was simply that it was a common one, and we elected to include a flavor because most people vape with a flavor. So we simply just wanted to include it. Having said that, you know, it raises an important point, and the work that we're doing now, we're actually not including flavors, and we want to understand, where is the harm coming from? Is it solely the base solution, or did it come because we had this French vanilla flavor in the liquid? So we're replicating some of these studies, and we're doing them with different settings on the e-cigarette device. And everything in terms of the e-liquid now is going to be, or our current studies are not going to have flavors, so that we can really sort of understand the ideology or the potential source of some of this dysfunction.
I think in addition to the device itself and the myriad of ways you can adjust the device, trying to understand what goes on with a two-hit scenario. So for example, these pups were only exposed during pregnancy. Now, what happens later in life when they start maybe vaping themselves directly, you know, I would expect a compound scenario. We know with aging, there's vascular dysfunction. Then when you add on top of aging process, a disease state such as diabetes or hypertension, you accelerate the vascular pathology. So I think a really an interesting question would be to understand if these pups themselves then became direct exposed to vaping, or what would happen if they developed a cardiovascular disease, whether they were induced diabetes, hypertension, a stroke. You know, the likelihood of them having a worse stroke outcome, it would be highly likely. So I think that's another level of resolution that, or a question that needs to come out in the future.
Paul and Mark, do you have any additional thoughts or comments? In particular, are there any future directions for your work that you would like to highlight?
You know, we're acutely aware of the fact that we only exposed these rats when they were pregnant. And we know that this is not the way human pregnancy exposures would occur. In fact, humans would be vaping beforehand. They wouldn't get pregnant and then just start vaping. But, you know, our purpose in designing the study the way we did was so that we could just really know if vaping exposure only happened during pregnancy, what would the outcomes be? And given the outcomes that we're seeing, we have to be tremendously concerned that if someone is vaping prior to becoming pregnant and then continues vaping during pregnancy, obviously we would not expect the outcomes to be better. They would likely be the same or possibly even worse. So what we don't know right now is, does vaping prior to getting pregnant perhaps change the pregnancy and make it more severe of an outcome? And that's a question and a more real world question, I think, that we have to worry about from a human standpoint. But the other question that we're sort of really interested in is, we've seen evidence in the literature that vaping affects male sperm count. So, you know, this isn't just a female problem. And so there are a wider array of questions with vaping that relate to both males and females' reproductive outcomes that I think really need to be understood here, that we just simply don't have a handle on right now.
I also think an important question to ask in the future is that we see this underlying phenotypical change in the endothelium with vaping that persists up to 7 months. We know that altering the endothelial phenotype can induce or lead to future adverse outcomes. So it's important to understand how vaping can impact blood-brain barrier, understand the outcomes of stroke, can it lead to cognitive dysfunction and vascular dementia? These are all important questions that, given the data that we see with underlying endothelial dysfunction in the cerebral circulation, it could have significant clinical consequences. And I think that's important to look at.
Well, I would like to thank Mark and Paul, our authors, and Alex, our content expert. And we hope that we can stay in touch and really discuss this very interesting topic much further, because there are so many unanswered questions, and it is of such great interest to not just us as researchers, but to the public as well. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the AJP Heart and Zirk podcast. Our theme music was written and performed by Ray Mitchell. Catch the latest episodes of our podcast at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.